Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo podcast. And welcome to your preview of Chelsea versus Wolves, the big fixture on Monday Night Football. No other big games up this weekend, nothing important aside from the mighty Chelsea on Monday night. And of course, it is myself, the majestical, the sexy fat man, Louis Beneventi, and it's my co-host.
All right.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Dan, well, I need you to be talk about how great you are. Like, you need to be like, you know, it needs to be like, I'm Louis, and you're like, and I'm Dan, who does this, this, and this. And we're like, great, what are we talking about today? We need to start being more professional. I'm thinking like a arrest is politics vibe. I'm feeling that's what we are, maybe, but
yeah,
more
but
dumb.
I'm not really down to be a war criminal. So let's just
Jesus Christ. Okay, yeah, fine. We'll just jump straight into Trevor Chalobah returning to Chelsea, a player that was in the summer not fit for purpose, apparently. Somebody who wouldn't be able to cope with the system put in front of him. But now all of a sudden he definitely can do it. And it was, you know, it's something which, you know, was the right decision at the right time, as was learning him out in the summer and putting him in a bomb squad, taking a squad number away from him, basically saying he was never going to play for Chelsea again. And then all of a sudden we need a centre back and he's called back in. I don't think we're going to even bother playing the usual game because we don't even need to. I think we can spend a solid 25 minutes on this because, mate, I was licking my lips the other day looking at how Paul Winstanley and Lawrence Stewart were going to try and twist this and say, oh, no, you know, we've made the right decision. Oh, it's great. Oh, but apparently Ben Adekbali called it. There were so many things coming out that it was great viewing as somebody who was firmly entrenched in the Trevor Chalobah camp in the summer.
Yeah, it is an I told you so moment. It really is, because, you know, we spoke about it during the summer. I remember doing a video literally the day we found out that Trev wasn't going to be taken to the US tour. And, you know, that was awful. I remember where I was when I saw the report from Matt Lord that he'd been barred from first team training. And I think it's very revealing how this incident on its own, I think, has exploded a lot of the myths, but also just I've been amazed how even people who've been supportive of this regime and the sporting directors and have tried to make excuses for them or tried to justify things before are now just fully like turning around and going, there's nothing left to defend. Because the Trev one, this is what I want to make clear, right? I'll admit my bias. I'm biased towards Trevor Chalobah. He is one of my favourite players. And I think he is a highly underrated footballer. But the story of Trev in so many ways, and we can go in different like branches of why the sporting directors haven't been good enough, and it's not just based on this, but, you know, the failure of so many key areas of the squad that we've discussed before. But the story of Trevor Chalobah, I think why it's hit a nerve for so many people is it's about principles. It's about ethics. It's about how you treat your own. And the way they treated Trevor Chalobah, and it's not just him. You can add Connor to this as long with the bomb squad that was evident during the summer. It doesn't reflect a club that makes supporters proud. It's dehumanizing. It's deceitful. It's soulless, it's cynical. And the funniest thing, but I guess the worst thing of it all, is it doesn't even lead to like anything better for Chelsea. They have to crawl back 5 months later to try and get that player to rectify their own errors. And I think Trev's resilience and his adversity that he's had to face and the way he's responded to all of it is really commendable. I think it shows a very strong character and someone you do want in a football squad. But he was well within his rights, as we joked about last week, to stick two fingers up and say, I ain't coming back because of the way you treated me. And the thing I'd say, if you're not Trev's biggest fan, I think it's important that you stand up against this behaviour now so it doesn't happen in future to a player you probably do like. That's the point of principles. It isn't just about doing things when it's the perfect set of circumstances for an argument. And I was saying this to someone earlier, I've been annoyed as we have watching Chelsea, as I was on Tuesday. Like, it's not a nice situation. I'm not really looking forward to Monday. However, I think there is a little bit of me after Word This Right, because people will take it and try and spin it in the wrong way. There's a bit of me that thinks, well, I wasn't completely mad with my criticism and concerns in the summer.
No, you weren't.
I think that that's in some ways kind of like a justification for a lot of that frustration I had during the summer and many people had during the summer. And I think the extreme turn here, especially against sporting directors, which I think is valid, I think it is the place you should be aiming your ire and criticism, because those are the people in control. Those are the people making the key decisions, and they are the one that bear responsibility here. Says a lot. So how did you, I know you were sort of coming at it from a more like delicious kind of irony and making fun, which I did a bit of myself. Yeah, but
I mean, you know me too well. You know full well that that's kind of how I roll. I try not to take things too seriously anymore, unless it's something which needs to be taken incredibly seriously. Even then, I struggle, to be honest. That's why I'm in therapy. But aside from that, see, even then did it. For me, on a serious note, when I was reading the briefings, as everyone calls it now, the briefings are all coming out, so it's a new word that everyone's using again. Seeing Win Stanley and Stewart and the media department evidently trying to find a way to Alistair Campbell the situation, should we say. You know, being very, very good at their spin, saying, oh no, you know,
Alistair Campbell, for why I'm not his biggest fan, actually was quite an effective, that was kind of one of the things that makes him quite infamous, is that he was this kind of aggressive spin doctor for the Tony Blair government. The problem with Win Stewart is that they fail on so many levels because it just comes across as incompetence. It's so shallow. It's so clearly farcical. It's almost like a comedy act. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not shrewd. It's not smart. And the fact that this was literally mere minutes after we found out Trev was being recalled, the spin happens, and already people were laughing at the spin. Like the spin didn't even get a chance to become spin, to really infect anything.
I mean, put it this way, Dan. You calling them a comedy act is actually incredibly harsh, because it is terrible, and it basically it takes the piss out of Eric Morecambe and Ernie Wise, obviously.
I'm sorry.
Burt and Ernie, Laurel and Hardy, you know, all these guys are actually good comedy doubles. These two are just I'm trying to find a word which actually isn't me being too harsh and won't get taken the wrong way, but evidently I was going to call them cretins, but I feel like cretins is too harsh. They're great at what they do in terms of what evidently they were at their previous clubs. Clearly a very good scout, and clearly a very good sort of like MD sort of person, did all right at Monaco, right? But this is ridiculous, the fact that they have been given so much rope, and it's going to keep getting longer and longer and longer and longer, because evidently what it looks like to me is Benedict Barley likes two guys who go, yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir, when he doesn't really have that much knowledge of football, if I'm going to be very honest. When realistically, you put in one very good sporting director, everything's going to be built out. Now, you and I, in the summer, both raised our concerns. We lightheartedly continued to raise them when the quote-unquote title run was on, but everything was kind of looking lovely and rosy. Now we've hit six games in the Premier League without a win. No win in the Premier League in a month, and we're kind of going, clearly some things need to be identified here. And the first thing that comes out after they recall Trevor Chalobah is, well, it's the right decision now, it was the right decision then. So, well, no, if you turned around to us and said, lads, we got it wrong, he's been doing really well, we want to see him come back, we're going to apologise to him, and we're going to do what we can, I would actually be far more open to not taking the piss out of them, because quite frankly, that would show a level of understanding and nuance. We haven't seen any of that ever. All we've ever seen is, see that player we nearly signed? Look how well he's doing. Look how great we are. See how well we're doing now? Look how great we are. When things go wrong, it's, oh no, hang on, lads, we were right. You know, it's not us. Hands off here. There's no accountability.
You can't judge the team till March. That was the one that got me recently.
Yeah.
That was actually, to be fair, was reported during the good times, like about a month ago. And I laugh at that because it's the lack of accountability. And I think it maybe symbolizes an environment and an echo chamber and a bubble, if you want to call it that, where clearly there isn't that much internal pressure on them, because I strongly felt they should have been let go with the failure to handle the Pochettino situation. Like, I thought that
I agree.
If Maresca, and it is a concern of mine with Maresca, that if it continues to get really, really bad, like let's just say Chelsea go on a really bad run and we continue to sink, and even to a point where Champions League football suddenly looks out of reach, which we both agree, and I think many people agree, has to be the main priority of this season. And then suddenly the conversation turns to, I still think it should be more the sporting directors, but Maresca's job is suddenly under pressure and in jeopardy. I always thought that there's a conflict there, because surely if they sack Maresca, there's nowhere left for them to go, like logically. But then I go back to things that I've been told about the club, but then also the way they act in the transfer market, which doesn't always seem to be based on the logical football decision or the football decision that will make your team better. That, well, maybe I'm coming at it from the wrong way. I'm foolish and naive to think that there are expectations, to think that there is internal pressure, to think that there is a responsibility for failures. So although I kind of sit there and go, if Maresca fails, surely that's the end of their time at Chelsea, because look at the amount of managers they've got for in a short period of time. Maybe it isn't, because I've said this to someone earlier. Like, I think that maybe for Beyda Diagbali, they're a convenient scapegoat, especially at the moment. Mm-hmm. And the moment those two go, suddenly no one's going to be looking. Like, Chelsea fans outside, maybe people still think Bowley's the main guy. But to Chelsea fans, I think any myth, any chance of that myth continuing was shattered in September when we heard about the split between the Diagbali and Bowley, right? So I think everyone now knows that Diagbali really is the big power player at Chelsea. The attention then turns to him if Chelsea continue to struggle. So I feel like that's maybe for Diagbali, maybe when Stanley and Stewart are a convenient shield.
They definitely are. They definitely are. But I just continue to be astounded by the inadequacies. Like, if I'm Beyda Diagbali, right, I mean, the score has been waxing lyrical about this guy on X over the past few days, especially. Atletico Madrid's former sporting director is now available in the market, right? He's free. Built some fantastic teams over the years with Diego Simeone, right? If I'm Diagbali, I'm being very honest, I'm turning around to these two and I'm going, lads, you're very good at what you do and what you know. You've had four windows. This is the four window agreement. We're going to demote you. We're going to put you to do what you do best. You do the scouting. You, to Paul Winstanley, whatever Lawrence Stewart does, you do whatever you do. Because obviously he was the multi-club model guy, wasn't he? So let him deal with Strasbourg. Let him deal with whatever this club in Portugal is we're going to be buying. Let him deal with whoever we're dealing with, right, in Brazil. Right, let him do that. Bring in somebody to oversee the whole process who knows exactly what they're doing, because this is not working. Because people can say it worked for 6 months. In fact, it wasn't even 6 months. It worked for 3 months. We looked fantastic for 3 months. Hits December and it's a completely different kettle of fish. Now, people may say that this is Dan and myself overreacting. If you know me well enough, you know very much this is not me overreacting. Dan's known for 10 years has seen me overreact multiple times. But I very much look at this and I go, I'm not impressed by them. I don't think anybody externally is impressed by them. Granted, we may not know everything that's going on inside the club at all times. I mean, Dan and I speak to people within Chelsea regularly. Not sitting there as ITKs, not trying to say that, but we're privileged to have a bit of an understanding of what happens within Chelsea. We're very lucky to have that, and we want to maintain those relationships. So it's important to look at it with, funnily enough, our favourite word for the past 2 or 3 weeks, nuance. And hopefully see these guys improve, because as Dan said, the reality of the situation is that they are a convenient shield for Bad Egg Barley. That's what they are. And him stepping to the fore saying, I was the one who called Trevor Chalabar, and then it comes out it wasn't him who called Trevor Chalabar, or, you know, these two going, aren't we so great? Look at how we've handled this situation. It shows an incredible lack of naivety, and it shows an even more incredible lack of emotional intelligence, because the business of football, as these two should know, having worked in football for such an extensive period, they should know better. Benedict Barley, right now, it looks to me, is coming in as the big, bald American businessman. The one thing which I raised concerns about when this takeover was happening. I was worried that we were going to get some, you know, some American investors come in who didn't understand what we were looking at. Right now, Todd Bowley looks like the good guy. Todd Bowley looks like the person who goes, well, this is what we should have done. This. Have an understanding. Investments, by the way, from Todd Bowley come into things with emotionable tangibility. Music, film, television, you know, baseball. Like, he's in sports. He knows it. Yes, baseball is different to football, but every sport's different to each other. But there's an understanding of the emotions attached to certain things. Egg Barley's coming in as a hedge fund manager who clearly wants to look like he's amazing, and I've not been impressed. There are certain things now where if he's got these guys as sporting directors, they need to act like sporting directors and look at basics, because there's basic things this squad's missing. If we look very, very briefly, I'm just using this as a case study, and we're not going to talk about the previous game, right? Because we don't need to, because we could talk about the previous six, because they've all had the same results at the end. Right, Reece James' goal aside, when it comes to second halves, Chelsea looked tired. They looked out of their depth. They didn't have any calmness in that team. And you could say that this is something that Trevor Chalabar brings all of, by the way. And we're talking about someone who's maybe a leader in that team, or should be a leader in that team. Yeah, if I'm honest, armband, if Reece ain't playing, it goes straight to Trev for me. Not because he's from Cobham, not because, you know, we love him because of that reason, not because we're Cobham sexuals, but because he actually has an understanding of football. He's a senior figure in that team, and he brings calmness to that side.
Well, it's about tangible evidence,
yeah,
and consistency, right? It's actually the opposite of what a lot of the Clear Lake era has been. I don't kind of want to repeat, because I think it actually says a lot that a lot of people could go back and listen to our supplement episode we did in September when the civil war between Bowley and Igbali came out, right? I feel like a lot of that, you go back and listen to that podcast, and this is before we beat Bournemouth, right? This is before any positivity about this season, and I think it'd be quite remarkable to go back and listen to that podcast, and actually a lot of it is still relevant, and it would be relevant because it supersedes that. This issue supersedes a single result, a form, a good run of form, a bad run of form. It's about the cliched, cringy, the soul of the club, the future of the club, the fabric of the club. Like, that's what those conversations are. However, like, you just looking now and pragmatically and kind of what needs to happen right now, like 17th of Jan when we're recording this, there isn't much left to go in the January transfer window, and today I'm seeing reports of Chelsea making inquiries for Garnacho from Man United and Gittens, who is a talented player, as is Garnacho on his day. However, neither of those two players are what most people looking at Chelsea right now feel are the substantial upgrades or the profile of players we need. Everyone knows that the obvious place to recruit, especially now Chalobah has come back, is centre forward. That is the clearest area of improvement. We're still looking at players that don't drastically improve what we have, and again, you get back to a key question I ask. Is it about making the team better in kind of the obvious ways? Or is it about, I don't know, the SD's own kind of big dissertation theory, as I've referred to it before? Like, this is, you know, their love for players who have previous connections to them. I don't know, because logically, those links don't make a lot of sense. Like, I'm not saying that our wide players have been perfect. They haven't, but no one can seriously look at me and say what Chelsea really need right now is an inexperienced, raw winger who struggled at Man United rather than midfield depth and striker. You just haven't.
We don't even need to look, for me, now that we've signed Chalobah, you don't even need to look at midfield. You've got. They're talking about a Swiss Army knife player, right? There is your Swiss Army knife player, centre back, right back, defence midfield. Okay, right, we're sorted. Done. Don't need to worry about that. It's fine. That I am less worried now about that area of the pitch than I am a centre forward. I love Nicholas Jackson, but like you said, it's so blatantly obvious that this team needs a senior figure to lead the line. You're not going to get a Diego Costa, right? But I'd love to have somebody in that side who talks and behaves like him. I always think about when Costa was saying, if I go to war, you come with me. I look to Ivan Toney as that sort of figure. Unfortunately, obviously, he decided to go abroad. But people love the sexy names, you know? If we're looking at the names we're going to be most likely linked with, it's Victor Osimhen and Victor Gyökeres. I would not touch Victor Osimhen with a barge pole after how that window ended. The whole thing of, if you carry the bricks, if you come in to carry the bricks, he didn't want to do that. Right, cool, off you go then. Go enjoy Turkey. Have fun, mate. Because you're going to be fielded off on loan and you're going to go to Saudi Arabia. It is that simple. It's that clear with him. That leaves one player. That money is now free to make that transfer. Chelsea need to just go for it. Now, Matthias Tell looks fantastic. Sounds fantastic. I've loved Matthias Tell for a couple of years. But can I be honest? I've loved him because he's great on my FIFA career mode. Would I sign him off the back of that? Not really. There's a great potential player in there, but I don't want potential right now. We have plenty of that. It is seniority. The January transfer window, as with the recalling of Trev shows, is for making your squad better right now. Securing what you need to secure right now. Chelsea need to go into the market and get someone who makes them better right now. It is that simple. Nicholas Jackson, I think, has been admirable. I think he's fantastic off the ball. I think the way that he brings everyone else to play is great. But unfortunately, he cannot hit a barn door with a banjo right now. And he needs to have somebody who can push him to do that. I think in a front two, big man, little man, ironically, I'm talking Crouch to Foe vibes, I think Nico Jackson would be fantastic. Chelsea are not going to play with a front two. He'd be great if the wingers come inside a little bit more. That's not how Maresca wants to play. He wants to have box crashers in Enzo. He wants Cole Palmer to be sort of free to maybe do that as well. The wingers don't really come inside. They stay high and wide and they put the balls into the box. But unfortunately, we don't have the player who can actually put the ball in the back of net right now. And it is, despite me and Score having a big argument about it on Final Score the other day, that is something which Maresca's not going to change in terms of his style of play. And we need to clearly get somebody who can make the difference to do that right now. All these young, promising players, I can't be bothered with. People talk about, well, City are signing this lad from Eintracht Frankfurt. He looks really good, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, City can afford to do that. They've got the players in their squad. They've performed on a consistent basis over the past 5-6 years. And they will then allow the players that they're going to be signing, these young, promising players, to improve and get better because they'll have those older players around them. Chelsea don't have that. Chelsea have a young manager, a young squad, and inexperienced sporting directors. I'm sorry, but Ben Agbali is a man who's been in business for a long time. I know I've said in the past, football is different to any other business in the world, and it is. But there are some basic things that are in place which make sense in any business. You need to have some element of seniority somewhere. It doesn't need to be your main man. It doesn't need to be somebody who is going to be in control of everything. But just having somebody who people can lean on throughout the system. But no, they didn't get that. They got rid of everybody who had any association with the previous Chelsea regimes. Pretty much anybody who's had any relationships with Chelsea. But they will keep the certain ones who make us look sexy because, you know, the 90s vibes and it's really good for marketing. We need to actually understand. I'm not saying I don't have. I'm more connected to Chelsea now than I am over the past 2 years, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And this is just my personal opinion. I just think that the people that we have in charge of dealing with the situation that needs to be dealt with right now are out of their depth, are inept, and quite frankly, have shown nothing but narcissism towards themselves at unhealthy levels. They need to sort their shit out, because it is potentially, right now, given how Chelsea's form has been this season, incredibly damaging to their entire process, not just this year, but the next 5 years. They've had their four windows. They need to deliver. Get your shit together, lads, I think is basically what me and Dan are trying to say, in a wordy and journalisty and, you know, synonymy way. To say it quite simply, sort your shit out, get it together, and let's get fucking Champions League football.
Couldn't really agree more with that.
We're not allowed to agree. We need to have something that it's.
I would disagree about argument. You know, you said earlier about Trev. He is a Swiss Army knife player, and I would back him to play defensive midfield because he did it pretty much all of his time at Lorient on loan. He hasn't done it that much for Chelsea, but I'd back him because he can play right back. I think he could play left back. He's that type of player, right? I think I'd back him to do that because he's done the job before. However, I would like to see either Andre Santos or even, you know, Ugo Chukwu had quite a good game against Man United in what is a really, really awful Southampton side, one of the worst Premier League sides we've ever seen. So I disagree with you there. And I just, my fear, and I guess the thing we're going to find out over the next however many months, basically till the summer, is what expectations are there. You know, if Chelsea get, and it is fair to point out that everyone keeps on bringing up Newcastle. Like Newcastle, if you look at the contrast of them as a club over the past month or so in terms of their form, is that they went through a really difficult run. And over the past month, things have clicked for them in a big way. They're obviously close to getting to Wembley again. They're now above Chelsea in the Premier League. Isak's hit a brilliant run of form. He looks like the best striker in the league. Everything has come together beautifully for Eddie Howe again. And the argument could be made that if you look at Chelsea's last performances, although, yes, I think overall it's, of course, objectively more negative than positive, Chelsea are still creating a high volume of opportunities. Like, it's not like the creative spark has completely been evaporated from the team. And I think if you're Maresca, you're sitting there and going, well, if we keep doing that, eventually finishing's going to return and we'll start scoring again, and hopefully that will lead to a better run of form. And neither of us are sitting here on January the 17th and saying the season's over. The season is very much not over, but that doesn't mean complacency. That doesn't mean inaction. And it also, to me, doesn't mean that you just sit back and wait for something to happen, because the club failed in the summer to make significant upgrades. And that's why you shouldn't need a January transfer window. You know, I think the January transfer window, if you're being serious in it, it means you've done something wrong in the summer. You should only really need the January transfer window if you have a horrendous injury crisis that forces your hand, or you maybe want to trim down the squad a bit. I always feel if a club has to do big things in January, it means they failed in the previous window.
I mean, sometimes it's just a nice little tweak. Like, we've seen City in the past sort of be like, yeah, they're like, not far off, just tweaking it.
There's an argument like, yeah, sure. So you'll get the Matic's, right? Like of Jose's first season back, where that team was inconsistent and missed something in central midfield and added something that made a big difference in the second half of the season, and then made an even bigger difference after the summer that was really effective. However, if you just objectively look at the Chelsea squad, goalkeeper's still an issue. That was never going to be rectified this month. Defence, we've, I think, rectified it now in some way. Midfield depth is a real problem, especially if we look ahead to the Wolves game, as we're about to, and in attack. You shouldn't go into a window with basically the spine of your team, nearly all of them having some form of a question mark. That's just incompetence. And I know you said similar, but I feel like my concern isn't that saying they need to get their shit together is like they've just taken their eye off the ball. My concern is it's kind of by design. This is what Chelsea is now. Like that's I think they're very much going with what they consider the plan to be. I'm not entirely sure things have gone off the rails, and it was this really great plan at one point and it's turned into something awful under them. I just think this is the way they act. So I think after a while you have to we have to start judging or start expecting what they've consistently done. And I'm not saying that I accept that. That's not me leading to a place of I agree with the transfer strategy, because I very much don't. But I think we're being a bit naive if we look at the actions and their evidence and then go, well, it'll just turn round instantly, you know, if we just scream a bit louder. I'm not entirely sure.
I mean, I think the screaming a bit louder works, but it only works if you're on Twitter. Because if you've got the big accounts on Twitter, I think evidently the club love to listen to those sort of people, which is why we re-signed João Felix, which is beyond me. So, yeah, hopefully those big accounts start use themselves a bit more wisely. But having said all of that, what we should probably do is move on to the Wolves game, because we've said everything we need to do on the transfers. I mean, we're not even going to bother talking about Garnacho and some of these ridiculous shouts, because I don't think there's any actual substance behind a lot of these. So we'll just keep tabs on them. And obviously, we will touch base and go through all of that stuff over the next couple of days. Potentially in a supplement on Sunday, we're going to try and source a guest for you guys, because you deserve it. That's what we're going to say to that. But before we head to the only part of the show with a theme song, we're going to hand you over to Enzo Maresca, who's got his own comments on the January transfer window.
Off the pitch, it's a disaster because so many noises that I don't think help us, but I don't think they help any club. In this moment, when there is any noise about some player, it's not easy, because even if you think that the player can be focused on us, but at the end, it's a human being. So if there is any noise about some different club, probably it's not focused 100%. So it's not help in this moment, this kind of situation. But we need to adapt, because it's like this.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right then, we go again. It's Wolves on Monday night. And this is certainly a fixture that Chelsea really ought to be winning comfortably. They have been poor for much of this season. A slight improvement from Wolves either side of Christmas under their new manager, Vitor Pereira, gave the Midlands side hope. They picked up comfortable wins over Leicester City and Manchester United and drew 2-2 away at Tottenham. So decent results there. But 2025 has reverted back to the same way as much of 2024. Wolves thumped 3-0 twice against Nottingham Forest and Newcastle, although, of course, those are two strong teams. They sit 17th in the table. Safe currently only on goal difference, level with Ipswich, who of course beat Chelsea over the festive period. So, yeah, that's what we're sort of dealing with down for Wolves at the moment. They've conceded more goals than any other team in the Premier League with 48, which is one more than Southampton's 47. But they have scored a respectable 31 goals, which is more than double fellow relegation strugglers Everton, who have only scored 15, and Southampton, who have only scored 13. Chelsea recently struggled against Wolves, losing 3 in a row between April 23 and February 24. But thankfully, that bad run was abruptly ended at Molineux in August with a 6-2 thrashing. At Stamford Bridge, Chelsea have won 2, drawn 2 and lost 1, which was the last time out. A 4-2 demolition last season under Richard Pochettino, where Mateus Cunha scored a hat-trick and Axel Di Sassi scored an own goal. On to the managers, and it's particularly brief this week. Maresca has only that 6-2 win to his name in matches against Wolves, so he'll be hoping for more goals on Monday night and a continued 100% record against Wolves. Vitor Pereira, his opponent, has never managed against Chelsea and will be hoping not to lose heavily for the third game on the bounce. So it's two managers who are not in a great run of form at the moment, looking to try and change that. Hopefully, it's the blue side that does it. It's back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right, Dan.
I'm Daniel Childs, host of the Son of Chelsea podcast, also a writer, just an all-round great guy, the guy you should be following, now doing live streams. Welcome to the podcast.
I hate you. You're supposed to do that at the beginning. Why are you doing that now? What? No, you... Okay, right. Let's just get into the 11. Let's do our team. Let's go through it. We're going to drop in the Maresca quotes as we go, because there are a couple of interesting ones that we've got to go through in terms of right back, well, the right-hand side, basically, if I'm going to be very honest, because there is some chatter on that. But Dan, let's just jump in. Robert Sanchez or Philip Jorgensen?
Philip Sanchez in goal.
Philip Sanchez in goal. So we'll have half and half. That works perfectly for me. Left back, Marco Correa, no question. Centre backs, Levi Colwill, Trevor Chalabar. I'm just standing at the bar with Trevor Chalabar. That's exactly what we're going to be doing, and I can't wait to be singing that from the top of my lungs.
That is gonna hit when I see Trev's name in the starting 11 again.
Mate, everyone's going to be going nuts. And then, do you know what the worst bit is? Because the sporting directors haven't realised their mistakes, they're going to look at it and go, oh, it's amazing, look at what we did. And we always look at that one to strangle the pair of them. Yeah. Just like, right back. Now, Enzo Maresca did say this on Reece James.
For Reece, it's not about if he scored goals or how many minutes. It's just to manage a little bit his situation. So we're going to see. For sure, if he play 45 minutes, that means that he can be ready. But what we don't want with the risk is that, we go again and injury again. We don't want that. So we want to try, since we start, we are in any case trying to help him. And we are going to do exactly the same in this moment.
Okay, so Chelsea's equaliser hero, Reece James. Firstly, Dan, how did you feel when that goal went in? Because that's one thing I didn't get to talk about after the game, really, because I felt pretty numb and everyone around me was going nuts. And I was kind of just stood there a bit like, this is embarrassing. We shouldn't be celebrating a last-minute equaliser when we looked like we were so far ahead in the game.
I was happy for Reece because he's been through so much and it was a lovely moment for him. And it showcases how much of a level raiser and difference maker he can be. And it was showing leadership, you know, at a moment when his team needed something. But I agree with you. I mean, I wasn't at the game on Tuesday, but I even watching it from home, I very much was, we needed to win this game. Like, it's not enough, unfortunately. It was a great goal and it was a great free kick. And I can understand why people were excited about it, but it wasn't what was needed. And I think it's slightly better than losing, but I think the overall mood of the game, it wasn't a late goal. Do you remember the Man United one is the classic example, because up until like the 90 whatever minute when we got the penalty and then Palmer scored, the mood inside Stamford Bridge and the mood around the club that night was going to be awful, like losing to that Man United side and being 2-0 up. And then within like the space of, I don't know, 60 seconds or however many like long it was, the mood of everything had completely changed and something had been salvaged. This was very different. Like the mood hadn't radically changed. I don't think that much.
No, it's. I mean, people were happier coming out of the ground, but I think it's the euphoria of those last minute goals. I am so lost on it now. It's wasted on me, I feel, because I understand why people feel that way. But having been working in football so long now, it doesn't really hit the same for me. So I understand why a lot of people felt better. Don't get me wrong, but for me, I was looking at it, I was still pissed off. I was really angry because it showed a complete lack of change, which is something which I do put on Enzo Maresca because he's refusing to adapt in some ways. It's the same game plan, the same things happening all the time, which do need to change. And it is something which Leicester fans did often say would be the case. And he got very lucky with them last season by the back end when he was so far clear with them come Christmas. Now it's kind of a case of, okay, well, we need to see those changes and those nuances in the team start happening. But I mean, for you and I think it's very clear. Reece James starts this game at right back, no doubt about it. I think now it's a case of we can't really afford to keep wrapping him in cotton wool now. He seems to be fit. He seems to be okay. Let's just get him playing football. And if he gets injured again, I'll be honest, so be it.
That's the position you're in, right? Is that, what, do you not play him ever again? Mm. Or you relegate him to a cameo role where he can only play 45 minutes at max. So maybe he gets taken off in this game at halftime. So that's the position, unfortunately, you're in with Reece. But yeah, I also think the results kind of indicate that I think you have to start Reece James. I feel like Maresca's under a bit of pressure now. The club is not, the mood around the club's radically different to what it has been, so he needs to win this game. And I think a lot of people will instinctively think he's just scored a goal to kind of bail you out of losing a game, so I think you should be starting him. Now, it's a little bit harsh on Josh Achimpong, because I think that Josh, I think a lot of us want to see him get more minutes, and obviously his natural role is really right back. He started two Premier League games in not his natural role, which feels very Cobham, to be honest. His introduction to playing for Chelsea is not in his best role. So even if for 45 minutes Reece plays or 50 minutes and then you have to take Reece off, I hope that Josh is the one that comes off the bench and plays a little bit of right back, because I want to see. I don't, just because Trev's come back and I'm happy Trev's back, I really hope that that doesn't mean Achimpong is now just relegated and doesn't play any minutes, because he can, you can't forget, he can still play at right back.
So you'd start him ahead of Gusto, because I thought realistically the next step would be, well, Gusto would come on at right back. No?
But the problem is like, Maresca's quotes, we didn't speak about it. I was quite concerned by Maresca's quotes pre-Bournemouth, where he basically sort of talked like, I don't really use right backs. Like, I don't believe in right backs. We're not doing any of that right back rubbish or full back rubbish round here.
Love that. He's gone full backs, utter woke nonsense.
Yeah, he's utter woke nonsense, his full backs. And I think that Gusto, unfortunately, from what I've seen so far this season, I don't think is best suited for that inverted role. I think he is someone that's got to be kind of playing the more traditional overlapping role, because we saw how well he did it last year. And his performance levels just haven't been that great, unfortunately. So, yeah, I probably would. And I'm someone who was a big advocate for Gusto last year, but I can't deny the performances simply haven't been up to standard. And when you've got a player like Achimpong, who I also thought was, I don't think it was a great act by Maresca, to be honest, to single Josh out and take him off on Tuesday. I don't think that was the protective act maybe some people think it as, or maybe Maresca thought it was, because again, we speak about what that game needed. Chelsea needed two goals. I don't want to see a defender coming on for a centre-back for a centre-back. I wanted to see an attacker at that moment.
Yeah. I think the only reason he put Uncle on is because basically you needed some height for set pieces. Yeah. I genuinely think that's the only reason.
And he did really score, to be fair. Like,
Yeah. I don't agree with it, by the way. I agree with you. When we saw the 60th minute, I saw brilliant subs. Who do I see? Tossing Adrabai. I'm like, oh my God, why have you done that?
Or well, maybe like he thought to himself, he's on a goal streak, you know?
Yeah, mate, maybe. Yeah. You know what? I'd like to think that's, maybe it is because at the top level, you still do have those silly little moments where it's a bit of fun. You've seen that when all the managers do their podcasts, like the Harry Redknapps and the Neil Warnocks. It's like, well, yeah, you know, Benjani was playing really well, but I thought, you know, we'll just stick him up front. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, just do that. Maybe that's what Maresca was thinking. But in a far more like Italian, and I'm going to use big words about on the ball, off the ball, half spaces sort of way, which I was quite annoyed at after the game when he started talking about half spaces in the on the ball, off the ball, and being really technical. My head just went.
Your beard was going ginger, and your hair was like receding to an extreme point, and you suddenly realised that behind you was this like really like weirdly coloured brick wall.
To be honest, there was a green, we're at the Rose, and there's like a green wall in there, and I was listening to the press conference, and one of my friends got a picture of my phone to my ear, and he did just put in the group chat, Louis turning into Sean Dyche. She's literally sat there, it's like utter woke nonsense. I was like, this is ridiculous. But look, I appreciate why he does it. He's very technical how he talks about his football, but sometimes just shut up and say you got something wrong. That's the one thing that really got to me the other day, but that's another conversation for another day. Centre backs, we said. Left back, we said. Right back, we've agreed, is going to be Reece James. Midfield three, Caicedo, Enzo, Cole Palmer, I think is, again, fairly self explanatory.
Well, if they're ready. I mean, Maresca wasn't talking that great about them, but.
Well, we should probably put the quote in here, shouldn't we?
Yeah, might as well.
We have Cole that is without, is not session today. Levi was not in the session today. Enzo was not in the session today. We have 2-3. Romeo was not in the session today. We have 3-4 players that they are doubt for Monday game because of last game. They get some problems. Cole was the ankle. You know, first half, they kick him. So he didn't train today. We don't know if he's going to train tomorrow, in 2 days. And the same situation is for Renzo, Romeo and Levi.
If Cole isn't fit on Monday, is this a chance for the team to show they can win without him, because he is basically relying on him a lot just to get the points you are getting at the moment?
Yeah, we rely on Cole because it's a big player, but it's not. I don't think it's. We prefer to play with Cole for sure, 100%. But in case Cole is injury or he has some problem, we're gonna find different solution.
Yeah, I think that the concern is that, I mean, he needs all three of those, but it's particularly Cole Palmer, right? Cole Palmer's the only one scoring for Chelsea at the moment, and it is one of those things where if Cole Palmer's on one leg, you're probably still playing Cole Palmer because he needs to win the game. So I think Cole Palmer will start. I think he will make the game. Caicedo's been out on his feet. He had a poor second half, unfortunately. I think he's been one of Chelsea's best performers. I've said that consistently. But I don't think he obviously had a poor half against Bournemouth. And Enzo, I thought, had a really good first half. I thought we saw the best of Enzo Fernandez in that first half against Bournemouth. But, you know, there is another side to being a central midfielder. And I think we saw him lacking in that in the second half. And you can't trust Lavia to stay fit. So although Lavia, again, is a bit like the Reece James situation. When he's on the pitch, you can see the impact he has. But mm-hmm. I thought it was quite notable that when Lavia went off the pitch, our midfield structure completely evaporated. Like,
it's almost like we need to bring back Leslie Ogechukwu.
Or Andre Santos, you know.
No. I want Big Les. I just want to be able to put as many Big Les quotes as I can on Twitter. That's it.
Yeah.
I just want to be fucking go on a mission with the boys. That's all I want. I just want Leslie Ogechukwu for the vibes.
Or I think that the only other alternative is it's just not going to happen. Chukwuemeka is not going to start this game, unfortunately, as much as I'd love it to happen.
Fuck it, he'll put Reece James in midfield. That's what he's going to do.
I wouldn't mind seeing that, to be honest. I wouldn't mind that as a rogue shout.
It's a rogue shout, but he'll never do it because Reece James will be injured inside 15 minutes. The other hamstring will go.
Oh, we were sorry. I was me and my my partner were watching the game, and as Reece celebrated, you know, he jumped up and like fist pumped towards the Matthew Harding.
Yeah.
And I have to say, me and my partner looked at each other, and I think we both like thought the exact thing at the same time. He's going to do his hamstring celebrating.
Can you imagine? It'd be such a Reece James thing to happen, isn't it? It's like, Reece, stop celebrating. Just chill. Just get back. Get stuff sorted. Oh, mate. I don't. What are we going to do about him? Anyway, we've gone realistically. Well, Caicedo's been out on his feet. Ender's not been great. Lavia can't stay fit. Like, you know, I said I wasn't worried about midfield. I now realise what a silly statement that was because I am now very worried about midfield. Mm.
It probably will be Caicedo and Enzo. I think they spoke about muscular fatigue, but it's concern, especially Caicedo is an essential player for Chelsea at the moment. Even with his flaws the other day, still him not being in the team for any period of time at the moment is really concerning. But I don't know, you know, unless Maresca really surprises us and you get a rogue Dewsbury Hall redemption story, I can't see that happening. Or Cesare Cassaday, like he really goes to his bench. But this is not what Maresca's done. Like Renato Vega could suddenly find himself as a central midfielder. I don't see it happening. So all the evidence up to this point tells us there is a select bunch of players that Maresca likes to use. And Caicedo and Enzo are two of those players.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what happens. Basically, guys, me and Dan are putting our midfield as a big question mark because we've got no idea because this is going to be a very interesting period for Chelsea, I believe. The front three, left-hand side, I think Pedro Neto I'd start maybe on the left-hand side. I know it's maybe
I'd still start Sancho. No, I'd still start Sancho. I know it's against his old club, but I still think Sancho... I just don't think Neto's been doing enough recently to justify starts. I think his form just hasn't impressed me. And I'm someone who liked Neto before we signed him, but I just haven't seen enough, unfortunately. I think he needs to earn his place back. So I think Sancho from a creative point too, I still think is more impactful. But then we get, but this is the thing, just to like, because then we get into the problem of the transfer window, right? Like, they haven't acted. Nkunku probably isn't going to be used. So it falls again to Nicholas Jackson. And you're just praying that Nicholas Jackson turns it round. And I think on the other side, to be fair, I want to give credit to Nonni. Nonni, I think, did show up against Bournemouth. I think Nonni had a much better performance. He put in one pass and one run down the right wing. He absolutely breezed past Kerkez and cut it back to Jackson, one of Jackson's misses of the game. So I think Nonni has earned his place back. I firmly believe in the starting 11.
Well, I mean, this is what Enzo Well, this is what Enzo Maresca, funnily enough, had to say about Noni Madueke.
I think Noni, I said many times, is doing well. But like all the rest, he needs to improve things. But for sure, he's in the right direction.
I'm personally still not sold on Noni. My big worry with Noni Madueke is, as much as I agree with you, he was great against Bournemouth towards the end of the match. My biggest worry is the fact that you don't know what Noni Madueke is going to turn up.
True.
And I like Pedro Neto purely because I know, even if it maybe isn't as good, or he's not been as good as he has been recently, I know you're going to get a speedy winger down the right-hand side who's going to put balls into the box, and 9 times out of 10 they'll be decent. And right now, I'm very much at the point with Chelsea where risks are not something which I think we can afford to take. And Noni Madueke, I don't think, has done enough for me over the past few months to start ahead of Pedro Neto. I prefer Pedro Neto as a player. I think Noni, my whole thing with Noni, again, is the body language. Is he going to track back today? Is he going to track back today? Is he going to make that pass? Is he going to move into the right space? Is he not going to be selfish? You don't know. And that's a big worry for me personally. I'm very much in the Pedro Neto camp. So do you want to play again? Rock, paper, scissors, decide who starts the Chelsea Echo 11.
No, but because you asked me for disagreement, I just disagree. I think that Noni has been a more impactful creative player. He scored more goals this year. Actually, out of the wide players, he's got the most goals. To be fair, that is kind of slanted because of the last time we played Wolves.
Yeah.
And I think at the moment it's a lot of players have been out of form. So I can only go off very recent games. And I think Noni had a much better performance. I think he showed a directness. I think he showed an urgency. And also I think a creativity. I like when he cuts onto that left foot, when he can cross the ball into the box. I think some of his crossing, like Neto's, can be quite devastating too. So I actually think that for both of them, it's not that I just haven't been as impressed by Neto. And I think Neto should be doing more because Neto has more Premier League experience. I think he's older than Noni. I think he should be taking the mantle and kind of taking a grip of the position more than he actually has in recent months. So for me, Madueke, I think has a more firm grip on it at the moment, and I'd like to see him start the game because I think he could very much contribute to Chelsea getting back on track.
Okay, all right then, we'll start him on the right hand side, as much as I disagree. But you know, that's what this is for. We've got to disagree sometimes, Dan. We can't always agree on everything. Apparently that's not good if people agree on everything all the time. Anyway, that is the Chelsea Echo 11 for Chelsea's trip to Stamford Bridge, because it's not a trip away from anywhere. I realised what I was saying as I was talking at the same time. Chelsea are playing at home Monday night against Wolves. A must-win game, quite frankly. There's no other way of putting it. Chelsea need to get the job done. And we're going to hand you over now to Enzo Maresca for any of the other quotes that you may not have heard ahead of the fixture.
Also saw Trevor Chalobah outside training. Can you talk us through the process of getting him back and also the role that he might play for you this season?
It's quite easy process in terms of we had few injury, as you know. So we were looking for a solution, and we thought that probably the best solution was to call back Trev. First of all, because we know him very well. Second, because we are sure that he can help us. And so we decided for that solution.
Settle straight back in, like he's never been away.
Yeah. Anyway, he knows the house better than me, born here, so. He was, first of all, he was very happy. I can see his face. I had a chat with him a few days ago. I had a chat with him this morning, and you can see you know his eyes when he's really happy, and we are happy that he's here.
And I guess he's got maybe a little bit of a sense of something to prove to you. He did let him go on loan, and now it's his second chance.
No, but the reason why he left at the beginning of the season, we all knew that it was more because of this kind of problems, fair play, financial, this kind of things, was not only technical decision. So we are sure, and the reason why he's here is because we are sure that he can help us now.
And can you just clarify, clarify the Broja situation. Will he be coming back to Chelsea? He's obviously picked up an injury between 10 and 12 weeks.
No idea, to be honest. No idea. I didn't speak with Moyes, and I didn't hear what he said. So no idea. At the moment, I don't have any news about Armando.
Just going back to Travis Chalobah, have you had a chat with him since he came back? So I think I'm right in saying that last time he was here, he wasn't even training with. He's one of those players who wasn't training with the first team. So if you had to reassure him and have a chat with him, because he was playing quite regularly when he was at Palace.
I'm not sure, but I think Trev trained with us until we flew to USA. I'm not sure, but so he trained with us, but then when we went to USA, he was here training and we were there. So he trained with us. And for sure, as I said, I had a chat with Trev 2 days ago. I have a chat with him this morning, and he was doing well there. And also, this is the reason why we call him back.
How much do you need a win at home? Your away form is better than your home form. I think you've only won four times in the league at home. Do you sort of think you need to sort of improve that record if you're going to finish in the top four?
Yeah, no, for sure we need to win games. Now, if we win all the games away and we draw some games at home, no matter. But in terms of balance, for sure we need to win games at home. Also because we need, as I said, we need we need our people, we need our fans with us. I think they can see the effort of the team every game, but for sure at the end of the game, when we win, we are all more happy, and hopefully we can give them the 3 points on Monday.
Do you see a difference in the way the team plays home away, or is it just things aren't going for you?
No, probably when we play away against teams that they sit back, when we play away, probably we are more calm, because we don't play with rush, while when we are at home, sometimes we want to play quick because, we want to show to the fans, or we want to attack quick. And this is a mistake against team that they sit back. Against team that they press higher, you can attack quick. The other day against Bournemouth, I think they were high pressing and we attacked so many times, especially first half, with the Nico, with Cole, with Denso. So it depends a little bit, but for sure, probably away because of the behave of the other team. Could be better.
The ball ban has spoken. Me and Dan have disagreed for the first time in a while. The sporting directors are still inept, and Tom has given you Statshagger's Legend. And this has been the Chelsea Echoes preview of Wolves at home. If you have enjoyed the pod, please make sure you give us a 5-star review. It really does help us a lot here at the Chelsea Echo. Make sure you tell anybody that you think would enjoy this to get on the pod train. That's a new one. I wasn't basically telling him to start listening to the pod. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to try and force it down his throat. So just please help us out here. It means a lot. Audience got better over the past few weeks. Really appreciate everyone that's come across after the supplement episode with Simon Phillips. Dan and I will be back for the next game. But this has been the Chelsea Echo. You've been listening. Dan is not going to ruin this outro, because I'm going to say that was Daniel Childs. And if you want to listen to him, make sure you head across to Morning Blues every single morning on Big Up. And I've been Louis, who edits this podcast. Yeah. Ta-da.